to follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Pauly Howard live in downtown Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. 3-hour banger lined up, all NFL here on the show today. Nick Whalen on the program in 30 minutes. Best bets on tonight's Monday night game. Warren Sharp, reaction to Week 17. A best bet, hopefully, from him as well tonight between the Rams and the Falcons, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll spend a lot of time on playoff scenarios, awards markets, and Week 18 numbers in this sport as well. And, Pauly, it's, I guess, fitting tonight that the Rams are playing on Monday Night Football, the last Monday Nighter of the year, because the entire landscape of at least the NFC would be completely different if this team didn't blow, and they blew all four of their losses, but if they just didn't blow one of them, and the teams that are playing next Saturday night for the one seed, they absolutely blew a game to each of those teams. The game just last Thursday against Seattle up 30-14, and that Thursday night game to Mac Jones and the 49ers.
Yep.
And so that's now they have to play for the five seed. That's what they're playing tonight for and what they're playing next week for as well.
Yep, and the significance and ramifications of the Saturday night game and what happens to the loser, much like Minnesota and Detroit last night. These owners are so stubborn, and they refuse to give up these home games that it's possible that 8-9 host 13-4, which to me is embarrassing for the league and stupid. So all these people getting mad at the group of five teams getting in college football, forget about the playoffs. The winner of Saturday afternoon's game should be relegated.
Yeah.
How bad this division is with the NFC South. Tampa's on an 0-8 ATS run, and they're playing for the division. They've lost 7 of 8.
Yeah, they exactly right. They have one game in their last eight. They're 1-7 last eight overall. They're playing for the division, and they will host potentially the number one power-rated team in the league and the team that has the shortest odds to win the Super Bowl, like according to everybody.
Yep.
That is just absolutely ridiculous, and the league has to do something about it.
Yep. They won't, but it's common sense to me, and it's sad for the league. That throws a wrench into things. That messes things up. You could have Bo Nix and Sam Darnold as one seeds. Seattle has the second most turnovers in the league, still fighting for the one seed and winning games, how good the defense is. That, to me, is incredible. 28 turnovers, and they're still in position to get the one seed. And the other one, the door is open, thanks to another Mike Tomlin stinker. That you want to see Derrick Henry in January with 30 carries? I mean, it's this close to happening. And to get the four seed and the potential matchups we could have would be fantastic. But
you can bet them right now, the Baltimore Ravens, at 10-1. Now, it's a little bit lower than that at some books. Hell, you might find higher than that at others. But I was staring at 10-1 to win the AFC today.
And I don't even know if Lamar plays. But I'm just saying, if he comes back for the playoffs and you have to think tackle that big boy who just set the record for most rushing yards as a visitor at Lambeau, if he, you know, common sense, let's give him the ball 35 times a game, which that is going to be a problem come January if that's the game plan.
Yeah.
Because he's such a beast.
So how about what John Murray at the Westgate, he was in on a column today, ESPN.com. He said everybody over there, they're very good at the NFL. They have been for many, many years. A lot of sharp guys making numbers. They said there's not much of a difference between, right now, in their opinion, between Tyler Huntley and this state of Lamar Jackson.
Oh, boy.
I don't think he's that wrong.
Yeah.
I really don't, because Lamar Jackson has had a terrible year, and he's had countless injuries.
Well, he can throw, though. I mean, Huntley had 100 yards.
He didn't have to throw, Paul. Yeah, what do you want? You want 300 from him, and then Henry'd have 35 carries? Well, not going to happen in the same game.
Well, number one, I think I have to move on if he can't play. You can't miss a playoff game because you took a knee to the back. And I'm not saying he's faking it. I'm just saying with all these injuries, and it's always something with this guy, I need you out there. You can't miss important games because you're always hurt. So as we said yesterday on the tailgate show, if Crosby could go for 3 number ones or whatever it's going to be, or Sauce Gardner goes for 2 number ones, I have to explore this if I'm Baltimore. That the fact that if he can't be out there and I can win games without him. It's also alarming that LaFleur has to come out and say Love is our franchise quarterback, because there's enough talk about it. Why we gave this guy all the money. The offense looks the same, if not better, when Willis is in there.
Well, again, raise your hand if you thought giving Jordan Love that much money when they did was the appropriate move. Diehard cheeseheads will say right here it was the right move, but I don't trust any fan base to make any logical move about their team. And that was just way too much money at the time. They were overreacting to a small stretch of football that he played, and you had no idea what kind of long-term quarterback Jordan Love was going to be. Like, do I think he's better than Malik Willis overall? I do. I don't want to get completely nuts and tell you that Malik Willis, based on a short sample size, is a better quarterback. But I have been saying it for quite some time on this show that Malik Willis under Matt LaFleur, they found something with this guy, and I don't actually mind him. I don't mind Green Bay when Love is not there and Willis has to be the guy. Now, that's a different story than him going to another team and being the full-time starter potentially next year. But that's, I will say that about almost every, not all of them, but almost every quarterback when they get a huge contract. I'm like, not so sure about that one. And usually that reaction is going to be the right one, the way it pans out.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, is you mentioned this a couple months ago with the what-if scenario. This Philadelphia defense is flat out nasty.
Yeah.
But they can't move the ball and they're broken offensively. Again, they're 9-0 when Hurts throws under 200 yards. But then you can't get anything going with the rushing attack with Barkley, and you have 11 yards in the second half and somehow still win the game.
And do not complete a pass.
Yes, right.
And you won the game.
You're right. So we might get Rams-Eagles. We could get Ravens-Texans. We could get Bills-Patriots for a third time.
Yeah, this is why
it's going to change everything.
This is why it's paramount for the Rams to win the next two games. If they do, they will be the 5 seed. The Rams, now they probably will not admit this, they do not want to go to Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs under any circumstance. And they can control their destiny. They would much rather, I mean, honestly, you ask 100 fans, who do you think you'd rather play if you're the Rams right now? Would you rather go to Philadelphia in round one, or would you go to the NFC South winner?
Well, that could be the Bears, too.
It could be.
You know, the Bears are only, I'm surprised they're only 2.5-point favorite against the Lions.
But I would rather, Paul, I don't want to go play the Bears either.
Yeah.
You know, give me Tampa,
well,
give me Carolina.
Yeah. You want that force, yes.
Yeah, you got to have that.
Yeah.
And as we saw last night, I mean, the Bears, I mean, I know that they, you know, first play of the game, pick six, here we go again. But that offense was humming last night, and I'm curious if, you know, I'm not going to complain about this. There are a lot of other things to be upset about in the world than saying, you know, you had to put the Seahawks and the 49ers on the Sunday night game. It doesn't bother me that they're going to give us Ravens Steelers. I would just fight back maybe a little bit and say I would rather see real football because the NFC has real football, and there's a chance that the Steelers and Ravens is not going to be a very fun game to watch overall. But is every game that San Francisco will play in from now until the end of their season just going to be a complete shootout and go over the total? That was the easiest bet you can make the entire year last night on over in that game. Just the touchdowns multiplying, yeah, one right after another.
Yes.
And despite Seattle's offensive woes now going on what feels like a good month, and Sam Darnold was awful again yesterday, and he should have had more than one INT. It's hard for me to imagine the 49ers defense getting many stops against the Seattle offense. That's how bad a shape they're in right now.
Yeah. Well, if you can win Saturday night, then you get the one seed, and then all you have to do is win one game, and you can get Warner back. That's also huge. Or just when in doubt, throw the ball to McCaffrey or hand it off to him, how well he's playing. But it's, can Darnold put together three strong games in a row? The answer is going to be no, I think.
No, I would bet on
that.
No.
That's going to be the same question of Bo Nix. And if he can do it and not turn the ball over, because they have been awful in some of these games against bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they play down to their competition, and we'll see that Jacksonville game is still fresh after how bad the defense played. So this thing's wide open. And the fact that you're not going to have, like, maybe no Lamar, no Mahomes, no Burrow, but Josh Allen's going to be a 7 seed. He's going to have to win all these games on the road.
Yeah, and how about this? The Buffalo Bills, over the last 30 years, 0-8 in road playoff games. I get it. That's going back way before Josh Allen got there. However, 4 losses in those 8 games have been with Josh Allen. 0-4 on the road, Josh Allen. And now he's going to have to go back-to-back-to-back games to come out of the conference. And he was dinged up yesterday in that game, had to go get an x-ray on his foot after it was over with. And they couldn't get anything going early in that game for the first half plus. And that's the reason why the Eagles are going to be very difficult for anybody to beat in the NFC. Their offense stinks, but their defense is a problem for almost every other team.
They're going to also have to play lights out, but take the ball away, it appears, and give the offense short fields. This just shouldn't happen. All year, they couldn't fix this or correct it.
Yeah.
So we went the whole season where Philadelphia couldn't get their act together. And I'm stunned based on the weapons that they have.
Yeah, they got all the makings.
Yeah, they do. They have all the players. And they can't make it happen.
Did you hear Terry Bradshaw? I rarely, if ever, watch any of the stuff in between games or pregame on Fox or CBS. I caught a little bit of it yesterday. That was the postgame, and he said that the Eagles are the most complete team in the NFL.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, he did.
Oh, my God.
I think like their ceiling is super high, but that's based on an offense that has not delivered like 90% of the time this year. I can't call them the most complete team in the league. I just can't because the offense has been broken the entire time.
Yeah.
If it's last year's team, sure. This year, I mean, how do you have multiple games this year where you don't complete a game in the second half? Come on. Yep. It's 2025. This is not 1962 we're talking about.
Shout out to our guy, too, in Cleveland, ESPN Cleveland, Tony Rizzo. He had a good line today, and he's covered the Browns for over 30 years. He's never seen a guy have an impact on the game without a sack like Myles Garrett did. The Steelers were terrified of that guy.
They didn't want him to get the record.
They didn't want to give him the record. He changed the game plan, and Rodgers didn't want to get hit. That was an A-plus job by the Cleveland defense. Oh, now, it helped no Metcalf. Washington broke his arm and no Austin. But that was phenomenal. They didn't want Garrett to celebrate. They didn't want him to have a sack and wreck the game. But he wrecked the game, and like he said afterwards, they were more focused on me not getting the record than winning the game, and he was exactly right.
Yeah, to his point there, Kenneth Gainwell, who has been phenomenal down the stretch here for the Steelers, he chipped him the entire game, had 3 catches, 12 yards. How do you do that? That's a Mike Tomlin special right there.
It is. No one loses more games to bad teams than Tomlin.
Futures up next. Tons of movement with awards again. I really hope it doesn't boil down to unwritten requirements. I'll tell you what I mean next on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
More now on awards markets and some player props for tonight's action. Nick Whalen joins the program with RotoWire, and he is on the Progressive guest line. Okay, so your shot at this now. We just ran down Rookie of the Year and the Coach of the Year. Our thoughts on that. Let's begin with Offensive Rookie of the Year, the way you see it between Chuck McMillan and still maybe Travion Henderson.
Maybe Travion Henderson. I know Emeka Buka is still hanging out there at 12-1. I think his ship has probably sailed. Although, I mean, part of the reason that we're even having this discussion right now is because this is such an underwhelming race. You know, you look at the players who've won this award over the last decade or so, it's pretty much all guys who have gone on to become at least stars, if not superstars, in the NFL. And look, maybe that will be Tyler Shuck. Maybe it will be Teteroa McMillan. But the fact that McMillan could have the game that he did last week in a huge spot for Carolina with a chance to lock up the division and still be the betting favorite at some books, I think says a lot about where we're sitting. To me, it would be Tyler Shuck if I had a vote, guys. But it's also worth noting that you look back at all the quarterbacks who've won this award over the last 20 years. All of those guys started at least 13 games, and the majority of them started 15 or 16. There is almost no precedent for a quarterback like Tyler Shuck, you know, starting 8 or 9 games, even if he has looked as impressive as Shuck has over these last few weeks, and taking home this award. So I think that's something you have to consider for a lot of voters, is a full season of Teteroa McMillan, even if there have been plenty of underwhelming games mixed in there, versus, okay, how much do we dock or maybe not vote for Tyler Shuck because he wasn't out there for half of the year?
Yeah, that's what it's going to boil down to.
Yep.
If they put him in it over Spencer Rattler, let's say 3 games before this, he'd be the runaway favorite right now to win it.
I think he would. I think he absolutely would. And especially if he was playing at anywhere close to the level that he has these last couple of weeks, right? I mean, the Saints went from one of the saddest operations in the NFL to still a team that has a lot of questions to answer, you know, heading into next year and beyond. You know, they've kicked the can down the road for so long, trying to cling to whatever remains, you know, of the kind of the end of the Drew Brees era. So I don't know if Tyler Shuck is ultimately, you know, your locked in starter. Is he going to be the starter for them 5 years from now? Who knows? But, you know, the fact that he has brought some real optimism to this team heading into 2026. I think that's kind of what's carrying the narrative right now.
What if the Bears get the 2 seed? I still think you could make a strong case for Ben Johnson. I mean, they lose to come down to the final play last night.
I agree. You know, in contrast to Offensive Rookie of the Year, this is maybe the deepest Coach of the Year pool that I can remember. I mean, I think you have at least five guys, Vrabel, Shanahan, McDonald, Cohen, and Johnson, who would be runaway favorites to win this award most years, right? At least three of those guys would be just a no-doubter minus like 1,500 right now to win the award. And instead, it still feels like a toss-up. You know, to me, Mike McDonald is not the guy I would put my money on right now at 7-1. It's been a very impressive year, of course, for Seattle. But I think he'll kind of split the credit there between himself, between Sam Darnold. You know, a lot of people think of that defense in Seattle as their first thought. You know, Vrabel to me makes some sense. I get why he's the favorite. Are people going to hold the schedule against that New England team? You know, they have the signature win against Buffalo, but that was, two plus months ago at this point. I think Liam Cohen at 12-1 is actually a pretty reasonable value. The Jags are the toast of the league right now. And I'm not just saying that as a Jaguars fan. They've won 7 in a row. They're the hot team. They have a chance to lock up the division in a big way, you know, as a heavy favorite against Tennessee in week 18. I mean, seeing Liam Cohen at 12-1 is crazy. I mean, he's kind of the guy that fits pretty much the mold of who we see win this award, which is, you know, team with relatively low expectation, shaky quarterback play, not only being better than we expected, but potentially being a top 2 seed heading into the playoffs.
He's got an incredible case. If I had nobody in this market right now, he'd be the guy I'd be betting at 12-1. I think that number is ballooned up way too high.
I agree.
Yeah. I think so. In the battle for the NFC South coming up this weekend, we're in the same boat here because the Buccaneers, I mean, have gone scorched earth on my bankroll countless times this year. I can't stand watching this team. I swore off them a couple weeks ago, so I can't bet them anymore. So what do you want to do this game against Carolina with the division on the line?
I don't want to bet it. I'll tell you that, because for as much money as I've lost on the Buccaneers, and I would throw the Chiefs and the Lions in there, just clinging to my priors way too much on those two teams. Those are the three that have hurt me the most. I'm at my wit's end with Tampa Bay, man. I don't know what's going on with this team. You know, I'm on here every Monday talking about, well, another bad game for Baker Mayfield. We've been saying that for 2 months. You know, the ironic thing is that Tampa Bay is healthier than it's been all season and is playing its worst football of the year. Like, they were playing significantly better when Chris Godwin wasn't out there and Mike Evans wasn't out there and Bucky Irving, you know, misses 2 months. All of a sudden you have all the pieces back and you can't even get to 20 points most weeks. I mean, it just feels like it gets worse and worse. The defense has completely fallen off of a cliff. I don't know how you could have any confidence if you're the Buccaneers heading into this game. And yet I still don't think Carolina is any good, right? They just played another perfectly Panthers game last week where the defense keeps you in it. You hang in for a half and then the Bryce Young turnovers start and you let go of the rope. Now, I will say Carolina has alternated wins and losses for 10 consecutive games, which is almost impossible to do. So if you're a sequence guy, a pattern guy, that would tell you that we're due for a Carolina win this week. But I have no idea, guys. With the number at 3.5, I'll probably just take the points with the Panthers because I don't trust Tampa Bay to score right now, but neither of these teams deserve a playoff spot. And I thought it was kind of funny that the win and in game gets the afternoon slot on Saturday. You know, I know Niners Seahawks is an objectively better game. Of course, that's going to be in the night window, but this already is starting to feel like one of those just sad, you know, Andy Dalton versus Matt Schaub wildcard games.
Yeah, well said. Bryce Young was 14 of 24 for 54 yards. That's horrible. Impossible. Come on. What do you like tonight in our final Monday night game?
Yeah, I lean Rams tonight, guys. You look at what this team has done off of a loss this season. There haven't been many of them, but, you know, they come out and put up 45 on Arizona after losing to Carolina. They take care of business against Baltimore after they lost that crazy game to San Francisco, took a loss to Philly in week 3, came out and beat a really good Colts team at the time in week 4. So, you know, without Davante Adams, there will be some doubt creeping in. And I know Atlanta feels like they're playing better. How much stock at this point do we really put into wins over the Arizona Cardinals, who've lost 13 out of 14 and a win over that bad Tampa Bay team that we just talked about? So I think we'll get a competitive game. You know, Atlanta has at least made some improvements, but I lean Rams. And then in terms of props, look at that Blake Corum over 43.5 rushing yards tonight. It's gone over this number in 4 straight. It's got double digit carries now in 3 straight games. They continue to show more and more faith in him. And, you know, this Falcons defense has had its moments. They're 27th in rush defense EPA on the season and have not really faced a good running team in a while. 5 of their last 6 games, have come against objectively bad bottom half of the league running teams. So I think if we see the Rams, you know, jump out to an early lead, they can ride Blake Corum in the second half.
What do you want to do on the Falcons side? Do you want to trust this chemistry that we suddenly have between Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts, or do you want to go with the workhorse here in Bijan Robinson?
Yeah, you know, both of these defenses have been good against tight ends this season, so I'm staying off of Kyle Pitts. You know, Colby Parkinson burned me and everyone else in the fantasy world a week ago. Yeah, you got to find something, it feels like, for Bijan Robinson. I'm looking at the receiving, over 44.5 receiving yards. For as good as the Rams defense is, they do give up a lot of yak yardage. They've given up the third most receptions to running backs over the second half of the season. You know, last week we saw both Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker had productive days as receivers against that defense. I know Drake London is on track at least to play tonight. He saw limited action last week. I don't know that he's going to be a huge factor. And I think that LA defense, you know, gets enough pressure on Kirk Cousins. He does have to dump it off to Bijan Robinson. I mean, he's got 15 catches on 22 targets over the last two games, 174 yards total as a receiver. So that's kind of been the offense for the Atlanta Falcons, and I think that's their shot to hang in.
Do a little NBA here as well. Nick Whalen, our guest, RotoWire. High total tonight, mid-240s between the Timberwolves and the Bulls, and you want to attack it from a player prop standpoint with Julius Randle. How so?
Yeah, the Chicago Bulls are kind of like the Arizona Cardinals or the Cincinnati Bengals of the NBA right now in terms of targeting that team in the prop market, targeting them in DFS. I'm looking at the over 26.5 points plus assists for Julius Randle. Chicago terrible on the defensive end, near the top of the NBA in both points and assists allowed. So that's one that I like. Take a look at Devin Booker as well. This is another matchup situation where the Suns get the Washington Wizards, who are bottom five in basically every defensive stat category you can find. So give me the over 11.5 rebounds plus assists for Booker, getting that at plus money.
And you also like Reed Shepard tonight for the Rockets, over 18.5 points and assists as well.
That's right. And yet another bad defensive team. Rockets going up against the Indiana Pacers. Shepard coming off a really nice game over the weekend. No Alperen Şengün tonight for Houston. So obviously not a one-to-one positional match in terms of Şengün being out, but I think we do see some trickle down in terms of the workload, in terms of the offensive responsibility for Reed Shepard with no Şengün.
You can follow Nick on X. He's at Whalen, but it's a number one instead of an L, at WHA1EN for RotoWire. Great job as always, my man. Happy New Year to you and the family, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Good job.
There you go. And he was on the Progressive guest line.
Big night for Stafford. I think locks it up. And the more you look and think about it, the Patriots have two wins this year against teams with a winning record.
That has to factor in.
Two wins.
That's it.
No, they're 10-0 against teams with a losing record, and they've body banked them. But that's just, that has to carry the day. They beat the Bills and they beat the Ravens. That's it.
Paulie's going to recap the action that we had from a betting standpoint over the weekend, and win-lose coming up next, including, how about this, a 110-1, 80-1, and a 60-1 that cashed all in the same game. Details coming up next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Time now to head out to the Progressive guest line. Warren Sharp joins the program as he has every single Monday at this time throughout the entire football season. You can follow him on X. He is at Sharp Football. The website is sharp.football as well. Warren, we've talked about almost every single game so far in the first 90 minutes of the show that took place yesterday, one of which obviously was the Eagles and Bills result, where the Eagles did this again. No completions by Jalen Hurts in the entire second half. It was three and outs the entire time. Couldn't do anything offensively, and yet they won the game. Something tells me they're going to be a tough out with that defense in the playoffs, but do you trust them come January?
I don't. I current form Philadelphia Eagles, with the way that this offense is playing, with the play caller that the offense has trying to conduct the offense, no, I don't trust them. But here's the thing. There are not many teams in the NFL postseason this year, more than any I can remember, where I say, I look at the top, you know, three teams, team that's most likely to get the number one overall pick, and say, I trust this team in the postseason. Somebody's really going to have to come in with their A game to knock this team off, because I think they've got a good shot at going all the way. It's going to make the postseason very entertaining and exciting. All of these games, somebody could beat the other team, because every game it's going to come down to matchups. But there aren't many teams that I trust inherently to do well. even the teams that seem like they're buttoned up, like we'll look at the Denver Broncos for a quick second. Mm-hmm. The Denver Broncos are a team that looks like they're buttoned up. They've got a defense. They've got an offense. They've got a bit of a run game. They've got a good play caller in Sean Payton overall. They've got a young quarterback who could be ascending in the NFL. Like, there's a lot to like. This is not a surefire, though, number one best team in the AFC, even in my opinion. And I think a variety of teams could knock them off. But if you look at Denver, let's take one of their most kind of the foolproof parts of their team. It's their defense, right? This is a list of quarterbacks that this defense beat. The only quarterbacks that they beat so far this year. There's a lot of them, but take a look at the caliber of these players. I'll go from most recent to earlier this year. Trey Lance, most likely week 18 because the Chargers are sitting Justin Herbert. Chris Oladukun, Jordan Love, the combo of Kenny Pickett and Geno Smith, Marcus Mariota, Patrick Mahomes, Geno Smith again, Davis Mills, who threw more passes in that game than CJ Stroud, Dak Prescott, and then look at these first five. Jackson Dart, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Jake Browning, and Cam Ward, his very first game in the NFL. It's the third easiest schedule of opposing quarterbacks. And if you factor in Trey Lance, by the time we get to week 18, it might be the number two easiest schedule of starting quarterbacks that a defense has beaten on the season. So, you know, yes, their defense is probably their best aspect of this team. But do I even trust that defense? I don't think that I do. So there's just so much that's left to be determined with the 2025-26 playoffs, and that's why it's going to be so fun to discuss.
All great points. And the winner Saturday night, you have a 49er defense that's decimated and can't stop anything. They would be the one seed with a win. Well, then you have Sam Darnold in Seattle with 28 turnovers.
Right, and you look at that Sam Darnold game versus Bryce Young. It was disgusting. Yes. From both quarterbacks. Yes. in that regard. You look at the San Francisco game. I mean, Caleb Williams is marching the ball up and down the field on them, but the Chicago Bears defense isn't good either. So, like, there's just so many teams that have one good aspect or one bad aspect to them, or some teams that have one good aspect like the Broncos defense, but it's very untested. It's just interesting this year why it's breaking like this is really going to come down to individual matchups and the need to handicap accurately as you work your way through the playoffs.
I know that you tweeted this out last night from the broadcast on NBC, and it was Chris Collinsworth telling that story in the offseason where he wanted to create some madness for Caleb Williams. And they would do like a hurry up off. This to me just speaks to how awesome Ben Johnson is, right? I mean, I think you probably felt the same way when you tweeted it out. And he's like, he would give him a play that's like 25 or 26 words long. Caleb will look at him and say, come again. And he crosses his arms like this and go, nope, you're running the play right now to get him ready for the regular season. That's phenomenal coaching, right?
Absolutely. I think Ben Johnson, like the way that some of these coaches work with their quarterbacks, deal with them in the offseason, get them prepared to play in the season, and then call plays and then build offense and then game plan versus opponents. There are just so many things here that matter. The little details, the big picture, it all matters. Ben Johnson's one of the guys who gets that. Then there's like the New York Jets front office giving the head coach a vote of confidence heading into week 18, as if we've seen anything from him. Then you have the New York Giants who go and win a completely meaningless week 17 game in Las Vegas yesterday, which they did this now for two straight years. They had the number one pick locked up heading into week 17. All you got to do is lose two games, week 17 and week 18. You've only won two games on the season. You're 2-13. Lose two more. We get the number one pick. You know what that does more than just getting the number one pick is draft assets. It's what you can do with it if you decide to trade down, which is extraordinarily valuable. And in addition, it's the ability to talk about the number one pick going to the New York Giants the entire offseason. We got like 4 months, 5 months where we'd be able to talk about this. It'd be great for that franchise to be able to discuss it. All the fans would be pumped up for it. Instead, what do? They go out and they win this game against the Raiders. Now the Raiders get the pick. The Giants are sitting here two straight years. I don't understand it from an ownership perspective. This is on John Mara, in my opinion. Players, if you stick them out there, they're going to play. They're going to do what you tell them to do as a coach. So the coach could tweak some things and change up the play calling, decide who's getting more or less playing time on the field. From a front office perspective, you could decide who to deactivate, who to activate, which quarterback to start. You can have some input over the backup coach now. You got an interim coach in New York in terms of Mike Kafka. You could really pull the strings like a puppeteer if you're Mara to ensure that we are going to get the number one pick. And for two straight years, he decided not to do that. I don't understand what he's doing, but this is an example of why the Jets and the Giants just don't win. They can't win because ownership is so terrible with both of those franchises.
It's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Scorched Earth right now with Warren Sharp on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, how about tonight? Big game coming from Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, or on the ground from their two running backs?
Potentially all of the above, but I think it's scorched earth on the ground with regards to the run game for Kyren Williams and for Blake Corum. I'll start with Kyren Williams. And basically the main aspect to this is the run defense of the Atlanta Falcons. While solid, they play three-man fronts on 62% of running back runs. That's the second highest rate in the NFL. Going up against multi-tight end sets is the kryptonite for the types of fronts that the Atlanta Falcons like to play. And they have allowed nearly 5 yards per carry to multiple tight end runs, which ranks 29th on the season, specifically against man concept runs. This is one of the worst run defenses in the NFL, and the Los Angeles Rams utilize man concept runs at one of the highest rates in the NFL. And running man concept with heavier personnel on the field, multiple tight ends like the Rams do, the Atlanta Falcons rank dead last in virtually every meaningful category. But specifically, they are allowing 5 yards after contact per carry. Ooh. Let me put that straight. After contact, they are allowing 5 yards per carry to man concept runs with multiple tight ends on the field. For that reason, I think that you look at a guy, we took him a little bit earlier, Kyren Williams, to go over his rushing yardage. It was like in the upper 50s. It's now into the lower 60s. Another way I'm looking to still attack this game, and this line is out there, I'm staring right at the screen, is at every single book. Blake Corum's longest rush, over 12 and a half yards. He didn't hit this last week against the Seattle Seahawks. I think there's going to be ample opportunities for him to get enough touches on the ground to exceed this number of 12 and a half for his longest rush. There's no juice on this. It's very reasonably priced, in my opinion. This is something that we were betting earlier in the season. He hit it three straight weeks prior to going under it last weekend. I mean, the times he was hitting it, he was going for like 20 yards on his longest run. Prior to that, he's getting a few more touches earlier on in the games as Sean McVay is working him in earlier on against some of the defenses to give Kyren Williams a little bit of a breather. I think they have success on the ground. Now, the key question is simply, does Sean McVay want to run the football here? Will he try to run the football? Or does he let Matthew Stafford chuck it all around the field a little bit? Because though they don't have healthy Davante Adams up, they should have a ton of success utilizing Puka Nacua. And Matthew Stafford, as we were discussing just before I joined you guys on air, will he need to try to put up stats just like Drake May with stat padding against the New York Jets to try to ensure that he wins the MVP, which he's the favorite to do? I think it's silly to like have it come down to, does Matthew Stafford throw two extra touchdowns this game instead of them winning the game by running the football? I don't think that should be the way that voters look at it, but that is the way voters look at it when they compare stats at the end of the day.
Yeah. Great appearance as always, my man. Follow him on X at Sharp Football. The website is sharp.football. We'll talk to you Sunday morning on the Tailgate Show. Have a great New Year's and we'll see you then. Okay.
Happy New Year, fellas. Good luck tonight.
You too.
There you go.
Well done. We're live all New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Follow the money on during the Rose Bowl in play. Playoffs, looking forward to it. Regular programming both days. VSiN by the book, 7 a.m. Rolling through a numbers game. Prop points, money moves. Follow the money, VSiN prime time and cashing out. We're counting down to 2026 and kicking off the new year. Spend your new year with VSiN, the nonstop home for sports bettors.
Some of the saddest stats I've ever heard in my entire life. You're going to feel the same exact way in the good, the bad, and the ugly next here on VSiN.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
We have odds on how many coaches are going to get fired before the Super Bowl. How many first-year coaches? Will any playoff coach get fired before the Super Bowl? Giants, Titans as well. Let me take 1 minute here and talk about that two-minute, well, the two-point conversion attempt and that decision yesterday in the Bills-Eagles game. We haven't talked about that yet. Look, I mean, locally here in Las Vegas, this is before VSiN existed, I was making the case on my radio show that I'm okay. This is good. This goes back almost 15 years ago. I'm okay if a coach wanted to go for two every single time. Like if you had the right scheme, the right play caller, and just if you had an edge there to get it, and it's about a 50-50 proposition anyway, maybe you could turn that into like 60-40 if you're good enough at it. So I've been pro two-point conversion for a long time, but not every two-point conversion attempt or decision is created equally. And I saw a lot of reaction yesterday where a majority of people, and I saw like Twitter polls out this, and it was a majority of people, like 80% of people, 70% of people saying, yeah, you absolutely go for two. And I just think that we've lost our mind as a society where you automatically think that. Here's the reason why I'm saying this, and I don't think it was automatic that the Bills had to go for two. Now, if Josh Allen's foot injury played into that, and he had an x-ray after the game, then I get it. Like, they don't want to have him go out there and get injured. The playoffs are right around the corner. And then I understand. Go for two, get the game over with. Also, keep in mind, a tie does Buffalo no good, because if they tied the Eagles yesterday, the division was going to be the Patriots. So they needed a win. However, the Eagles had, what, 17 yards in the second half?
Yeah.
Yesterday, it was three and out, three and out, three and out the entire time.
First down.
Jalen Hurts completed zero passes in the second half.
Yeah.
Offense could not do anything. For the first time in weeks, the Bills' defense stood on their heads, right? And they were awesome when they had to be to keep them in the game down 13-0. And now this goes from mid-third quarter to the end of the game. The Bills put together a 65-yard drive down to the Eagles' three that resulted in a turnover on downs when Josh Allen ran the ball and he was a little bit short. Then they put together back-to-back touchdown drives, one 54 yards over 6 minutes. The other one was 83 yards in 3.5 minutes for another TD. So you couple that all together. Eagles couldn't get an inch on offense, couldn't complete a pass. Defense probably gassed on the field for countless plays in a row and allowed this team over the span of about 10 minutes to go 140 yards and score two touchdowns. If you go to overtime, you are clearly the favorites to win the game in that spot.
I'm risking injury. Good points, though. Also, got him wide open. Allen made a horrible throw.
That's true.
And I also worry about, could I kick a field goal? I'm on my fourth kicker, and the Eagles are so good at blocking kicks, getting the paw up there, Carter, and blocking the extra point.
Well, I was going to say,
there's another scenario,
I must
too.
Point out that kicking the extra point's not automatic.
Mm-hmm.
I must acknowledge that. It's not.
Yeah.
But if you just ask anybody, like any situation, no, you go for two. Absolutely, of course. No, you don't. That's my point. Not every single time do you have to go for two. It's based on game flow and what's happening exactly. Did you have any confidence in the Eagles getting any offense in the overtime if they went there? How could you? Unless there's going to be a big PI or something like that.
Yeah, I was concerned about Allen getting hurt, though.
So was I, and that's the biggest. That's the biggest angle.
All over him. That was a great job defensively. Damn. Great props here. How many first-year coaches will be fired before the Super Bowl? A half.
I think it's going to be Aaron Glenn or Pete Carroll.
Are they safe?
Again,
Pete Carroll said he's had good conversations with Davis, but man, you go 2-5 or 2-15 and you fire your OC and special teams coach. Oh boy.
I don't know how Pete Carroll could possibly be safe. I think he's got to be a goner. I would restart again. But then again, this team will be paying how many coaches at the same time? Four?
Yeah, right.
So I don't know if you want to do that. And the other one, I mean, I guess Aaron Glenn has a vote of confidence. He got that like a month ago. And it's only gotten worse.
After we have a plan comment to the fan base. Okay, trust me. How many coaches will be fired before the Super Bowl? Over, under 3.5. Did McDaniel do enough here? They're 7-9. They've won 5 of 7.
Well, didn't he also get the dreaded vote of confidence?
No, he's going to have a new GM, though. I don't think so.
Would you whack him?
I would. Yep. I would start over. No Tua, no McDaniel, no Tyreek.
Here's my...
If they lose Sunday, Harbaugh's got to go.
Yeah, he's on my list for sure.
Yep.
Harbaugh's out.
He might go to the Giants. It's an interesting fit.
Yeah, and by the way, he's not even listed on odds to be the next Giants head coach. At an offshore book that has odds up.
Okay. Zach Taylor going to survive?
I would like to say no.
Stefanski will not.
You think he's a goner?
Yes.
And I think that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, he's had a bad year.
I disagree with that, but that's okay. I think it's an absolutely horrendous organization. They don't know how to get out of their own way.
There's a lot of candidates here.
So Glenn would be on the list, but I think he's okay. Harbaugh, absolutely, if they lose the game. Pete Carroll, I mean, come on. Your guy, Raheem Morris, should be gone. I think he's a disastrous head coach. Todd Bowles if they lose.
How about this? How about the Buccaneers win, but get boat raced in the playoff game?
And then you mean he's fired?
Still gone.
Well, that would be, will any playoff coach be fired? He's 3-1.
Will any playoff coach be fired? Mm-hmm. Yes. That's happened before, too.
Maybe that happens. Would he be the only guy then to make the playoffs that would get whacked?
That's happened.
No. I'm saying this year.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
So I got Jonathan Gannon on the list as well.
Absolutely. Come on. I can't believe he's still there. They can't stop anything.
Right.
He's a defensive guy. They've lost 13 of 14 games.
Yeah. Is that enough to bet over 3.5? I don't think so, though.
No?
Because I think Raheem Morris should probably get fired, but probably not enough for me to make a bet on over 3.5. I think Pete Carroll should get fired, but...
Is Sean McDermott okay? 6 or 7 seed?
If you do...
But they'll come back and say you went 12-5.
Yeah.
Assuming they beat the Jets. But what if they go? What if they get buried in their first playoff game?
Who would you like to get fired? Out of this entire list that you think is probably safe. I think Zach Taylor needs strong consideration here.
Yeah, it's enough already. You're killing Burrow. You're wasting all these years with Burrow. So bad.
There was also, they put up odds on Burrow's next team, by the way.
I'm more interested in Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson can happen, Burrow.
Okay, I got it. So
there's Lamar Jackson. There's drama going on about they're taking shots at him. Video games and work ethic, and he's always hurt and stuff like that. And this is getting interesting.
Yeah, how about some of the stuff that was said about that guy?
Outrageous. I would lean Miami. What's Lamar Jackson to be a Dolphin?
5-1.
Okay.
Don't hate it. I kind of like that angle.
Yeah.
To the Raiders, that's the short shot. He's +250. Would Lamar want to come out and play here with a dumpster fire?
No way.
I don't think so either.
No way.
The same thing with the Cardinals. They're 3-1. Although, man, imagine him in that offense. Holy smokes, would that be on fire. In a good way. The Jets, 4-1. You just retire.
No.
The Falcons are 6-1.
Mm.
Would they kick the tires on that and punt on Michael Penix already?
After they had their chance. Remember with all the nonsense with the owners?
I know that, yeah.
The collusion? Yeah. No. All those owners, they could have had him. They said no. They could have signed him. He was out there.
The Colts.
Problem is he doesn't have an agent, so it's a mess.
Colts are 9-1. Oh, my God. Give this to me right now. The Vikings are 12-1.
That'd be interesting.
I would. Yeah, sign me up for that.
Too. Giants' next head coach. Halfley's the favorite. How bad has Green Bay been down the stretch defensively? He's hurting his case.
But factor in how many injuries, though.
So.
They have a
ton. Stop the run.
It's not just Micah Parsons, Paulie. It's been a ton of dudes out on defense.
Stop the run. They're giving the ball to Henry. Mike McCarthy, the second choice. You can take Marcus Freeman off the list. He's staying at Notre Dame. Clint Kubiak, 6-1.
Mike McCarthy should never get it. Come on.
No. Flores is going to get a look, though.
Yeah, he deserves one.
I agree. He's 12-1 to be the next Giants head coach.
Does that make sense?
That's when the Belichick text.
That's right.
He texted Brian Flores and not Brian Daboll.
Do you think that the Giants should go in the direction of defensive head coach or offensive head coach? They just had Brian Daboll.
Defense is horrendous, I know.
They might want to go defense and then hire a really good offensive coordinator.
I'll go with that. Yes. Joe Brady's 33-1.
Stefanski's 33, Kingsbury's 50.
How is Harbaugh not listed?
Yeah, maybe because he hasn't. Well, that's offshore, so they don't care.
They should put him up.
And the Titans' next head coach, Nagy, is +250.
Come on.
You're not hiring that guy.
No.
Not happening.
Same guy, and McCarthy.
This is just, they're going to plop guys up.
Yeah.
That could be
maybe Brady. I don't know. They're asking Kingsbury about rumors. He's a coordinator.
I think you're right.
I can't go Kingsbury
yep.
with another shot. Nope.
We talk all the time about making smart bets, and smart advertisers are doing the same thing with Mission Media. If you want real results, Mission Media connects your brand with audiences that actually engage, from premium podcast and connected TV to data-driven digital campaigns. They deliver measurable ROI, and as VSiN's exclusive ad partner, Mission Media gives you direct access to one of the most loyal, action-oriented sports audiences anywhere. Your brand deserves more than impressions. It deserves influence. Get started now. VSiN.com/advertiser. Email advertising@VSiN.com. advertising@VSiN.com.
Monday Night Football next. Is Sean McVay going to try to get Matthew Stafford the MVP? And some high numbers tonight for Stafford and Nacua. VSiN.com says, I don't care.